Good evening, family. My name is Marla, and I am an alcoholic.
Marla.
Hi. I'm going to bring this a little closer so I can see you. I'm such a shorty. When Bill asked me to do this here, I quickly said, sure, no problem. And then it's taken this time for me to realize again, yet again, what an honor it is to share what AA has done for me. So without saying one more word, because I could screw this up so bad, I publicly and openly invite the God of my understanding to be right here in me and all around me and here with all of us tonight. You know, I know when we come to these meetings, we look around and we see people from all walks of life, and everybody's got a story, and there could be a lot of differences, but the one real similarity is the fact that we just can't drink alcohol. And I've found, I can tell you for a fact that I cannot drink alcohol. I have found, since God has removed that obsession to drink from me, that there are lists and lists of things that need to be removed from me. And there are lists of things that you can relate to, other than just the fact that alcohol almost took all of our lives away. So I thought that because I'm a chatty Cathy and I can go all over the map, Bill was worried that I would be afraid to talk for 40 minutes, but that doesn't scare me. That should scare you. I decided to be responsible with your time and my time, and God has asked me to jot down just a few things as to show you where I was. Because you know what? It's important to me to say out loud where I come from. And if you can relate, fantastic. And if you can't, rest. I just want to share a little bit here. I grew up in a religious home. I come from a very upfront family. The stage is comfortable for me. This is easier for me than sitting down there with you eye to eye. That's why this is dangerous for me. That's how I grew up. I was taught to perform. I was taught how to sing my heart out, play my keys off. I mean, just go crazy. And I've done that all my life. And the stage will always be a dangerous place for me. When Bill told me there was a stage here and that we were all on the stage, I didn't know that these men were going to be sitting right behind me. I thought we were all going to be on some stage together. I didn't get it. So this is a scary place, and I'm glad that God is with me. Only because, I don't know if I made that clear, it isn't that I'm scared. It's that I like it a whole hell of a lot. In the church that I grew up in, was the first little solo that I did was my very favorite song. It is part of my story, and it is Jesus Loves Me. That's the song that I did, my very first little solo. And when that solo was over, I left the stage at 4 years old in my little blue dress and my little black satin shoes and little nylon socks with the ruffles around them, you know, all that cute little look going on. And my mom had me dressed so cute from head to toe. And she played the organ off to this side of the stage, and behind that was they call it the baptistry. So, behind that's where they don't baptize in this particular church. And when she was playing the organ and I was done with my solo, I decided I was going to go back there and check out the baptistry, thought swimming might be fun during the church service. So I finished my solo and I went back there, and there was an elder in the church that met me back there, and I was molested that day. That molestation from the four years old till 17 was a continual thing. My point in telling you that is, not only did I go through horrific shame over that, I got sickly, terrible stomach aches. So if any of you in the room drink like I drink, and any of you in the room can identify with shame, we have something in common. So anyway, and then if you can identify with physical body pain, then we have another thing in common. So I would complain of stomach aches. I would be awake all night yelling for my mom to help me with my, I had a stomach ache. I was little. I had no words to tell her what was really going on behind closed doors. I wasn't able to explain. And it wasn't very long. She tried everything. She didn't know what else to do. Finally, she said, well, whining is in the Bible for the stomach, and it's in the Bible. So I began to enjoy little shrimp cocktail juice glasses that my mother would save full of sherry at the age of 4. And the very first time I sipped that sherry, my legs got warm, my stomach got warm, my head got numb, and I had died and gone to heaven. And it just was what the doctor ordered. I wasn't able to explain what was going on with me. I just knew I felt better. So, needless to say, I don't remember a whole lot between 4 and 10, other than there was a lot of inappropriate touch, molestation, secretively. Church was a great place for everything to hide in. I thought I knew God. Why would he let this happen to me? Maybe this is all I'm worth. I'll drink the wine. Then I, at age 10, was, it was, puberty came early. That's all I need to say. With that came cramps. With that came pain. With that came pain medication. With that came wanting to drink more. Turned 13. Couldn't date till I was 16. Promiscuous at 13. Couldn't date, but I could go stay with a friend for the weekend where all the men were. Alcohol, men, sex, shame, alcohol, men, attention, shame, alcohol. Painkillers, alcohol. I bring that up because I'll tell you one thing. I have worried for the last 4 years and 9 months whether or not I should say a word about painkillers when I'm at an AA meeting. I do it because it's part of my story and it's in the book. So if you have a struggle with that, I apologize, but it's in the book. And when I read that book, finally, somebody told me the truth. Soon after all the promiscuity between 13 and 16, I met my high school sweetheart and the love of my life, and he was a singer. My family were singers. We were upfront people. We got together, and it was the Barbie and Ken of heaven had met. We sang all over the place. Recording artists, songwriters, all this stuff made me feel like I was on top. So when I tell you this stage is scary, it makes me want to get down right now and stand down there. Because this is a place that I shouldn't be too often. I am so aware that I'm standing on sacred ground in this meeting. I was living that life that people talk about, you know, the one that they think is so wonderful and fabulous and makes you feel so special. I was completely lost inside. And the more lost I got, the more I drank. I married that man. We were drinking buddies. We partied hard behind closed doors, and it was a secret for years. We became pastor and pastor's wife of one of the churches here in town, a large one. Worship leaders. I would get up on a, I speak my story, I would get up on a Sunday morning with a hangover, singing God's praises. That was me. And I thought I knew God. Between services, I would come down and I would take my tranquilizers because I couldn't drink at the church grounds. But I could hardly wait to get home to make that Long Island IC, let me tell you. I get angry with myself when I even talk about it, but I am probably more honest tonight than I have ever been. And it needs to be this way. And I will tell you this. I'll get to this later, but I have been forgiven. And I learned that here in these rooms. That's what blows my mind. That's what's so ironic. You know, it's one thing to have a relationship where you have one with the alcoholic ego and one that's not. But you get two alcoholics full-blown and going at it, that's some crazy living right there. And we have two fantastically talented children who lived in that crossfire. Incredible musicians. Thank God for God, because these children are so talented. They can write, sing, and play. They're best friends. They're in their mid-20s, one of them later 20s. And they're very close, and I thank God for that, because I wasn't there a lot of the time. I was that mom that fell asleep in her plate in the soup, you know, in my plate. When the kids were in high school, they'd come over and bring their friends over because we were the cool house. Yeah, the mom that sat at the table and fell asleep in her soup. That was real cool. The night my daughter went to her senior prom, I was ironing her little cute shrug, but it was satin. Turned the iron a little too high as she was going out the door. Mom, I forgot my shrug. Oh, it's right here. Big old hole in the back. You know how long we shop for those things, ladies. You know how long you wait to be that senior that gets to go to that prom? That's a hard one for me. And she has forgiven me. Hopefully by now I have made it clear to you that, yes, I qualify as an alcoholic. Underneath my drinking is attention-seeking, money, sex, power, business-owning, recording contracts that make me feel so whatever the word famous is supposed to mean. It was not enough. And all I could do was drink, because it wasn't enough. My church family at one point told me, "You're dying. Did you know that?" And I said, "What do you mean I'm dying?" And they said, "Well, you're dying." Well, I pretty much already knew that I was a dead soul, but they meant physically dying. And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" "Well, we need to take you in." "Take me in where?" "You need to go see a doctor." "Okay, let's go see a doctor." So I went to Fresno. They didn't take me to the doctor's office. They took me to St. Agnes. I said, "Okay, cool, whatever. Maybe I'll, you know, score on a little more medication." By that time, my my intake of that little daily concoction consisted of 640 milligrams of OxyContin a day, and I can name 20 other medications, and this is an alcoholic meeting, so I will not go on with that. But the very cocktail that I was taking is very similar to the one written in the book. Sedation, basically. At the time that I went into the hospital, it was my church girlfriends that took me. They knew about alcoholism, and they knew that I was an alcoholic. They also knew that my partner was an alcoholic, and they also knew that he didn't want any help, and he decided to just walk away the day that they asked if I wanted help. And so they took me to the hospital, and I was in a spin drive for 30 days, and I told the doctor before I went in there, you need to know this. You're telling me that you want me to go into rehab. And he said, well, we're going to wait at least 24 hours because all of your organs have shut down. We've discussed this. You know what's not working. And we need to make sure that your heart will work for 24 hours, and then I want you to go into a rehab. And I said, clearly you have a pastor's wife rehab. And he looked at me and said, girlfriend, you need to be knocked down a few notches to the real world. You need to find out who you really are. And if you'll consent, I'd like you to go where I send you. That was the first time I took a suggestion. And I went in. And for 28 days, I went through pure hell. Physically, emotionally, mentally, and I wasn't anywhere near started. When I left there, I had lost 40 pounds in 28 days. Some of that's back, but we don't need to talk about that at the moment. Anyway, I left that rehab, and I was shaking so bad I couldn't hold a spoon. And there are people here that suffer with that kind of detoxifying your body. It takes a long time. I know my sister, bless her heart, is this one of the miracles of the program, too. A year and a half or so after I got sober, she called and needed some help, and she wanted to get sober. And so I went down there, and that girl, I tell you what, she celebrated her 3 years last week. Isn't that awesome? And she has this incredible saying. I love this saying. We were talking about, and now I got off track, so Lord bring me back if I need to go back, but she was talking, she had a salon at the time. At the time I had a salon, so anyway, she said, I got to go to work, but I'm detoxing, you know. And I go, no, I know, you got to go to work, but do you want me to drive you? Because I was, you know, I'd been around for a while. No, I could drive. So she could drive, but she got to her salon, and she called me from her desk where all the books are, you know, the appointment books are, and she's like going through the books. This is like 5 or 6 days coming out. She calls me and she goes, sis, my head is all fuzzy. I'm trying to take care of these people. And you know those snowballs? Those things you shake? I feel like, who's shaking my snow globe? It was so funny. I guess you had to be there. Anyway, I loved it. I think that's the greatest analogy. And I did lose my train of thought, and that's okay. I told a friend tonight, I am amazed at the things that we live through, and then we get to get here. The things that we survived, the things that we did. And ladies, if you are new, I encourage you to make friends with ladies. Men, make friends with men. There are, on occasion, healthy relationships that can be formed between a man and a woman in early recovery, and at times it's dangerous. And have found that out many times. That is a lesson that was a continual one. I am amazed at my stubbornness. I will be boldly vulnerable with you and tell you that I know I'm supposed to talk from some of this up here on my paper, but my vanity doesn't want me to wear my glasses, and I can't see the writing. So here they are. These are my questions. I got problems. And you know what? The first thing that's written here in this paper that I just saw is big facade. Big facade. Well, that's an issue. Big time. Back, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about leaving that, that spindrift. My husband came to pick me up that day, and we left and went to lunch, and he had a beer with lunch, and I sat there with my iced tea, shaking like a leaf, didn't want to be there, but, you know, I played the game, and we got home. It, 4 days later, just to jump quickly to it, 4 days later, he brought me my favorite bottle of Chardonnay, and it was on and cracking, so I got 4 days out of that $10,000 stay. My doctor had given me two really important homework assignments. One of them was, you need to really consider if you can stay in a relationship with somebody who's still drinking. And number two, you need the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, of course, I did what every smart alcoholic did back then, and I called my husband right away and I said, these are the two things I'm supposed to really look at, whether or not I should stay with you, and I really need AA. And his response is, of course you need to stay with me, God will fix you, and number two, you don't need AA. I said, okay, honey. End of story. So for the next three years, I proceeded to drink with him every single day until I started drinking more than him, but I blamed him for everything under the sun. I thought it was all his fault. I don't know if anybody can relate to cohabitating with another alcoholic, but that it's chaos, and your children are caught in the crossfire. There's no question about that. Mine definitely were. Anyway, it got continually uglier and uglier and uglier. I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is another one of my, for the time being, was an addiction because I was able to get any kind of medication, and I could drink more, and everything got crazy and wild and wonderful. I never felt anything. So all I ever really wanted to talk about was being sick, and, you know, I'm sure I wasn't a bowl of cherries to live with for the ex either. But we stayed together for 25 years, and I finally left thinking it was all him, and it wasn't all him, because when I left him, I was left with me. And it didn't matter where I went, I was there. To this very day, no matter where I go, I'm still there. And I have a heck of a time with my own self a lot of the time. That's my biggest problem, is just me. And finally there came a time when a decision to do a complete divorce needed to take place. I filed, thinking that he'd call my bluff. I told him that if he wanted to stop drinking, we could get back together. He said he didn't want any part of any AA at all. And by that, at that time, when I filed, I was 28 days sober. That was November 29th of 2004. And I was in a hospital at that time. And when I got out of the hospital, my husband at the time had decided to do a geographical change move, and my two kids decided to go with him, and that was the most devastating thing that I've had to live through and stay sober. And you people helped me stay sober. The divorce became final after 25 years. You people helped me stay sober. As soon as that took place, I decided to keep doing hair, because I'd done hair, that's all hair, and music, that's all I knew, so I kept doing hair, and a single person doing hair. I couldn't afford life, and I didn't know how to do life at all. Brand new in recovery. The first thing I was told to do was get a book, get a sponsor, do the steps with your sponsor in the order that they come in, go to meetings, and keep that conscious contact with God. And sometimes there's a whole day where all of those things are actually going on. Rarely. But I'm telling you what, it works. Earlier in the meeting, I told you that molestation was a part of my childhood. There are so many women and men that have been in that boat. Alcoholism runs hand in hand with that. One of the things that I never wanted to do was go to college, because if I went to college here in Visalia, I would have to face one of my perpetrators, which was an uncle of mine. So here I am at 43, barely, I'm not 43 now, 48 now, but then I was 43, and I needed to do something with my career, and I knew that hair wasn't going to be it, and I had to walk on the college campus to go back to school. You people taught me how to do that. You know how? Forgiveness. We forgive others, and we forgive ourselves in this program. The resentment bag was really, really full when I got here. And God has just been helping me to remove each one of those obsessions. And that was one of them. So I went to COS, scared to death. I did it. I faced him face to face. Did a confrontation based on how therapy would teach you to do it, and I didn't have to drink because you taught me how to do this. I stayed in school. I finished COS. I signed up for online courses. Next month I'll have my AA in psychology, and I signed up for the bachelor's program. Thanks to you. And that's the little girl who saw shame. Maybe this is all I'm worth. Where's mom and dad when you need them? Alcohol. Oh, my best friend, alcohol. In the very end of my disease, everybody was gone but me. And I walked into Cypress Rehab alone. When I say alone, I mean my blood family was not there. I take that back. My sister was there, now that I think about it. But I had AA friends that I barely knew walk me in to Cyprus. And you know what doctor I got when I got to Visalia? When I had been in Fresno 3 years before, the same dadgum doctor. So he said, you remember the two things I had mentioned that you maybe should think about? You still with the dude? And are you doing a program of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, no, doctor, but I will do anything you tell me to do. And he said to me, well, girl, I think you're serious. And if you'll do those two things, I will see you for a whole year for free. In November, I will be seeing him for 5 years. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am to a doctor who could walk around like his you-know-what don't think. But the one thing he wants me to know is that we can't live in alcohol together as a team and think we're going to make it, and we need AA. That blows my mind. I'm like jazzed about that. I am very, very grateful. And I will tell you, it's interesting. The things that take place even in sobriety are a shock. This is, sounds like small potatoes after everything I just told you that you have taught me and got me through these last 5 years. But last Thursday, I was laid off. I have no idea how I'm going to pay my bills. And tonight, it doesn't even matter. I have everything I need right now, this minute, and more. You know that family that moved away? My kids? We talk every other day. We are so close. But Seattle's the music capital of the world. They need to be there. I get to see them like twice a year. But guess what God did? Gave me all kinds of people here. I got a new family. There's some that are kids that I love to call my own kids. Anybody under the age of 26 can be my child. Above that age, you're not, you know, that would make me too old. I'm just teasing. I love people. And this program has taught me how to do that in a healthy way. And I have a long way to go. There, by the grace of God, go I. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much for listening. Appreciate it.
Yeah. If you have any questions you'd like to ask Marla, now would be a great time. You can raise your hand and we'll let you call.
All right. Don't be shy. Anybody? Yes. Absolutely. No problem. Did she ask for my phone number? Absolutely. After the meeting, you got it. You're very welcome. Yes, Larry. Oh, that was, wait. Yes, Larry. That was fun. Well, you know what? I really appreciate that request, and I'm seeing those with longer time behind you say no. So, but when we go outside in the parking lot, I would love to sing Amazing Grace with you. You're welcome.
One area
of my life that has changed the most since I've been sober? Absolutely, my hair. No, that's not right, Gary. Hey. That's right. But it's got to be more than that, please. Everything is changing. I guess my hair. That's not fair. Oh, you get nicknames in this family. For some reason, I don't know why, Colleen called me one day and, how you doing, home chicken? I said, just fine, home squash. And ever since then, she's squash and I'm chicken. Just thought I'd share a little bit of trivia. Any more questions? Yes. There are no words for that. Without that, this would all be talk. It would all be talk. He is a very cool God. Thank you for that question. Do I believe what? in AA? Yes. Because the reason why is because prior to AA, I didn't know how to be honest. So today I can be honest. Yes. You know what? Since it's me standing here, let me just share with you. It would be very easy for me to attack that one. But I can't answer that because it's my story and his story, and I pray for him often. Anybody else? You know what? I think I have forgiven myself. But when I say it out loud, like tonight, when I share it, it's like a scar, you know? It's been healed, but the scar is still there. So I still... It will rear its head, and then I have to pray again. And I just say, Father, I feel shame. You know you do, kid, but you've been forgiven. Kind of thing.
You know what I'd like to know is a lot of us come to AA, we're out drinking, and we have really close ties to a church or to our perception of God.
Right.
And oftentimes when we get sober, that relationship and that perception of God changes. Can you talk about how the differences between the God you had while you were drinking and the God today?
Sure. The unfortunate part about the God that I had prior was all built on what people said and what people thought. The do's and the don'ts, the rights and the wrongs, and blah, 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 blah. AA, with their gentle, loving, encouraging way to just like talk to someone greater than you for a short period of time and maybe get to know this God, it was a night and day different approach. So that scared little girl could come to that God. The scared little person I was in the other setting was so afraid of not being perfect. I was scared to death. I always thought God had that big hammer, and I was like the mouse that was dodging the darn thing all the time, you know? And now, I can stand naked in front of my God. Sure, I'd like to ask him to change a few things. But I can just be me, my whole naked underbelly. You know what I mean? I'm not afraid. I have a healthy fear of God now because he is so much bigger and so much larger than any of us. But I do know that he's a loving God now and that he cares about what happens to me and where I'm headed, where I've been. He cares about it all. And he has all the time in the world to listen to me. That's the God I got, sure. Does that help? Do I understand God? You know what, I'm going to deck him when we get outside. There's a song I was listening to in the car before I got on the premises, and I chose it particularly. I'm sure God did it so that I could answer this question. Kidding. But this gal, Addison Road, is an incredible musician, and one of her lines is, "What do I know of holy?" I think that I understand that God loves me. I am quite certain I know he loves me and that he loves every one of you. And I'll just as soon spend the rest of my life learning to know more about him. So in answer to your question, no. I pretty much don't understand God. But I'd like to. I think I'm done.
Thanks, Marla.